Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
This is Full Change with Tom Laidlaw.
Okay, here we go. So, good morning, Tom. It's a snowy, very snowy day here in New Jersey and Connecticut. How are you doing today?
I'm doing excellent. I was out there. Now, my good deed of the day, to have some elderly neighbors in my condominium complex. So I go clean off their cars for them. They never thank me, but that's another subject altogether. But I don't know if they even know that I do it.
They probably don't.
Yeah. So that's the good deed, right? You don't do it so that you get credit for it.
No, you do it to do it. We haven't shoveled yet. We're hoping that it stops because we have a difficult driveway to navigate. But I'm hoping to get a special little guy who's here with us today. It's my son's 9th birthday, so he's going to... Yeah, I'll put him on for a second.
Thomas, what's happening, brother? How are you?
I'm just kind of here.
You're just here? Okay. And you're not no school today, so you want to go sledding, correct?
Okay. Yeah.
And your father said we're definitely going. Isn't that what he said?
No.
Oh, he said maybe?
Because apparently we can't get out of the driveway.
That's a lame excuse. Tell your father he's the most wonderful father in the world and that we can't wait to go sledding together. How about that? Say that to him.
I want to go sledding really bad.
And let's go sledding on your birthday.
So you missed the other part, though. You got to tell him he's the most wonderful father in the world.
At like 1, all my friends are going sledding.
Okay. Good. So your dad will have the driveway cleared out by then?
Hopefully. You better.
If he loves you, he will have the driveway cleared out and he'll get you to sledding, yeah.
Exactly. I want to go sledding really bad.
Yeah, and you're a fantastic son. You're good in school. You listen all the time, so you have the right to go sledding. So yes,
exactly. I'm exactly a hockey goalie.
Okay, good. I'll see you tomorrow night too, but on the ice.
Oh, that's right. So yeah, so Tom, my son's organization, the Rangers, do some wonderful work, as we've said several times here. And if you're one of the partner organizations, every year they have a clinic/practice with one of the Ranger alumni. Last year, his team had Brian Mullen. But this year, and it's tomorrow, the special guest is none other than Tom Laidlaw.
Right. Over at the famous Sportorama.
Sportorama. So this should be, maybe we'll bring up the mic and talk there and talk to some of the kids, because that should be an interesting event. I think people are fired up about it.
Yeah, it's Sportorama. Beautiful. Where's that? Muncie, New York? Is that Muncie?
Lovely Muncie, New York, tucked away in a nice Hasidic community. Right in Rockland County, New York.
That building's been there a long time, too. That's
50 years, I think. I think 49 or 50 years. Yeah, it's been there for a really long time. And you'll be back on that ice for the first time in a while.
Yep. Yeah, I haven't been on the ice very much at all. Yeah.
Now, you know what we'll do? Maybe we should FaceTime Dave Silk from Sportorama. Maybe he'll bring up the Sportorama incident that everyone's longing to hear about.
We'll go play racquetball.
That's gone now. It's a Hasidic gym.
Oh.
It's a Hasidic gym called Vibes. So maybe you curse the place. I don't know. We got to figure out what hurts in there.
There's some vibes going on that night.
Well, he's giving some clues.
That's like 40 years ago, too. Oh, my goodness.
Wow. And I guarantee this, the building still looks exactly the same as it did 40 years ago.
Yes. Yeah,
no change.
The inside does, yeah.
The inside does, too. Yeah. They just keep throwing paint on it. Anyway, it's a lovely morning, like we said. Sorry, my son was here it's his birthday, and he's home from school, so it's like a double whammy for him because they had a snow day, so he wants to go sledding. I will take it. Thank you for the guilt.
Tom's family is a great family. The kids always imitate me. They listen to the show before so many times. And, oh, it's a wonderful show.
Oh, they do.
They're good, too.
Well, and my middle child, Molly, so Julie actually helped us edit this in the beginning, but my middle child, Molly, is an actress, and she actually is a lead in a podcast, a children's podcast. And she's very good at doing voices, and she does Tom Layla all the time. She's like, it's a fantastic show.
She's hilarious, too, the way she does it. When she does it, I'm just dying laughing. It's good.
Yeah.
You don't really listen to how you sound, right? So then when somebody else imitates you, it's free. Yeah.
Yes, you can be very Canadian at times. Not often, but at times very Canadian.
I think when we're talking to Canadians, like more of it comes out, right? Doesn't that work?
Oh, it does. But yeah, you know. And again, the one that people point out, I think Rob Carr pointed this one out. You say, of course, when you discover something, and I love it. I've said this several times. You say, "Oh, I didn't know that." That's your go-to, and it's great.
That's my genuine excitement of learning something new.
Absolutely. And that's what it's all about, man. It's all about learning and discovery. We had we had Riley Cote on. He was all about that, learning and learning new things.
That was a powerful, he was
for sure.
That was cool, man.
Yeah, we had some good guests. Like Don Waddell, your buddy, was on. And now today we're going to have a great one. We're going to have a legend, Los Angeles Kings legend, 56 goal scorer, great mustache back in the 80s. Yeah. Charlie Simmers coming on the show today. It should be a good one.
He was a legend back then too. You know, he was married to a Playboy model. You know, down the Triple Crown nine, playing the All Star games and everything. I will tell the story during the show. But he was such a nice guy on the ice too. Like he'd suck you in.
And he'd go score goals. I wonder if he's going to talk about his Playboy his ex wife who was a Playboy model. Maybe he'll get into that. I don't know. He might not want to. We'll see.
I'm going to try my best to get him talking about it.
Of course, you are.
I mean, that was funny though. You're playing against him because you're thinking. And he's married to a Playboy model. And that was just fantastic, you know?
That's pretty cool. But he's one of those players, wasn't particularly fast. I don't think he had a big booming shot.
No.
He's a big guy, but he scored goals.
Yeah. And, you know, he'll admit it too. He played on the line, the Triple Crown line, but he also contributed to that line. You know, Dave Taylor, Russ Sardin, and him. Just him feeding off those guys, although they're fantastic players. And I hope you didn't talk about Dave Taylor too. What a mean guy. What a great guy. Oh, God, so mean. But I played with him. We sat right beside each other in the locker room. One of the nicest guys in the world.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Well, didn't he sucker Gretzky, too, at one point?
When
he did. He dropped him, right?
Yeah. He wasn't afraid of anybody. I remember, we'll hopefully talk about the show, but we didn't play against LA all the time, right, because they're in the West Coast and we're in the East Coast. So there's usually not that big a rivalry with guys. You know, playing against the Islanders all the time, the Flyers, there's always rivalries, you know, team-wise and individually. So, you play against Dave, and you didn't really have to do anything to him, and all of a sudden, he's, cross-checking the head or something. What are you doing? I already hate you already. I've been done in the hate.
But you described Dave Taylor. That's basically the starting Tom Laidlaw's game. Cross-checking you when you're not looking.
Yeah, I know,
Flashy.
It is funny when you hear guys now that you've played against and stuff. Like, John Tinelli and I are great friends now. We coached together, played together in L.A. But we played against each other, and he was the Islanders. I was the preach. We did some stuff to each other. It was just like,
And well, we had Brian Propp on, early in the run, and he said, he's like, if I saw Layla out there, I knew I was getting lumber across the arms. You know, you told me at one point, you said, I went out there to try to break his arm.
Yeah. Yeah, we played a preseason game, and he was going down the boards, Madison Square Garden, and slashed him across the arms, broke a stick. So next time he's coming down the boards, I go to do it again, he stopped. He just wouldn't go down the boards anymore. And that's really what I wanted, right? So he's still scoring 50 goals a year, too. You know? That's the thing with those guys at that NHL level. Yeah, I mean, maybe you can intimidate them a little bit once in a while. They're still good to score.
Yeah, people, the argument always comes up about different eras, everyone says Gretzky, he couldn't. They're so much faster now. But just watch the old videos. And people say Wayne didn't get touched. That's bullshit. Wayne was getting hooked, two-on-one, all the time.
It would be interesting now if we were allowed to play the way now, the way we played back then with the hooking and holding. Because it's just like even playing a one-on-one, the stick was right in the middle of the legs. The can opener, we used to call it, spin the guy around. So I don't know how anybody beat us back then. You watch now, you can't do that kind of stuff. So, we've talked this before. To compare the years, the refereeing was, the rules were still the same, but they were called differently. The equipment was different. Training methods were different. Yep. I'd like to think the great players from any era could play in any era. They'd have to change their game, but they'd still be.
Connor McDavid would be great in the 80s, but he would get hooked, held, slashed, cross-checked all the time. Now, who knows how he would deal with that? You just don't know. Gretzky would be great now with that freedom. So wouldn't be as fast as Connor McDavid, but he would get it done.
Yeah, he'd still get it done, the players now that aren't that fast can still be great players. Did you see the video recently of the Toronto player slap-shot into the empty net, and then he get cross-checked and back? See,
the Ottawa player came in and he ripped. He had an empty net. If people haven't seen this, he's got a breakaway and an empty net, and he takes a slap shot from 3 feet out.
Was it the Ottawa player that did it?
Yeah, and then Morgan Riley jumped him. Yeah, he must touch him in the head. Yeah. I think it's all good except for the cross check to the head. He should have just dropped the gloves right there and went with him.
Yeah,
he got him up high.
Yeah, and that's the difference. And then the guy that got cross checked, he's laying on the ice. So the rest of his teammates are in there sticking out for him when he made the stupid play from taking the slap shot. Go ahead, I'm going to take a slap shot on that, but turn around, get ready. These guys are going to come. That's
Anyone who's played hockey at any level knows if you do something like if you pull up now it's changing, but like in the past, if you pull off a Michigan, they're going to come after you. Yeah. If you did something like that with you showed somebody up. You go to the front of the net, you're going to get slashed. Now it's changed a bit, but still, he should have absolutely, like you said, he should have been like, okay, here's a slap shot, come get it.
Yeah, and then he stayed on the ice for the rest of the
game. Yeah, that's kind of lame.
And here's the problem. Now you go in the locker room, and you're one of the tough guys that's sticking up for your teammate, and he's laying on the ice. You're looking at him like, I mean, that just ruins the locker room, that kind of stuff happens. But did you remember waiting years ago when Sean Avery was with the Rangers, and the Russian player, I can't remember who he was, scored a goal against Tampa. I remember Vinny LeCavalier came after him, and then he pretended he was like shooting the shotgun.
Oh, Anisimov. He's back with the Rangers, actually. He's in Hartford right now on a PTO.
That was hilarious. Because he had no clue what was going on. He was a Russian player. Why is everybody coming at me? You can see the look on his face like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
Avery got kicked out of the game, so he's in the locker room. I think they had the camera there. So it's just Avery and Anisimov when he came in, and he's looking at Avery like, what did I do? And Avery's dying laughing at him because he understands the whole situation. He's done that stuff himself. And he's understanding the kid. He couldn't even explain it to the kid. He didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, I think that was the year that HBO was following the Rangers for the outdoor.
Yes.
So it was great. So you had all that behind-the-scenes stuff, which we love as fans. We love to see that because you don't get any inkling into that. You know, everything is so polished and produced. Yeah. But that was kind of more raw. And it was Ridley Greig who took the shot with 5 seconds left. He blasted a slap shot. And Morgan Riley, I mean, it's an empty netter. You know hockey 101 is you just slide the puck in the net, game over.
Yeah.
Full windup.
Yeah, like you're watching, and then to not be prepared after the fact, just showed he grew up in a whole different, you're talking about a different era. He obviously, this kid's just unaware totally of what he's doing on the ice.
No, I think he was fully aware. I think he was at the home crowd, fire everyone up, and then, as Riley hits him, he just goes down. And he just lays on the ice, covered his head.
That'd be embarrassing. I know it's different now, but I still think it's the same thing. You go down in the locker room, he should be apologizing to his teammates.
Yeah, sorry I dragged you guys into that.
No, here's another one, too. Okay, so we're doing the show after the Super Bowl.
Yes.
And you see Kelce go after his coach, Andy Reid?
I did. First reaction was like, what's wrong with this guy?
Yeah.
Then if you saw them both afterwards, Reid and Kelce was talking about his coach, and he essentially had tears in his eyes. And he's like, he taught me how to channel myself. He's like, he's a great man. He's the best coach in the history of football. Yeah, at the time, I thought it was kind of lame, but Reid laughed it off like, no, he's intense, and I know what he was trying to do.
I just don't see, what's Reid going to do? He's obviously going to make it seem like it's not a big deal. He's a 65-year-old man. What's Travis Kelce, 30 years old? He's a football player.
Don't get in his face. Just it's a bad look. Just don't get in his face. You can say, coach, put me in. I can score, and I get one win.
I have no problem with the guy being irate. I want to be in the lineup and making sure the coach knows it. That's fine, but don't physically go after him.
Don't bump him. Yeah. But afterwards, they both had great things to say about each other. And Kelly said it. He said he's an emotional guy. He said Reid's helped him in the 10 years he's been on the Chiefs. He said he loves him. So I think it's just don't do that. But I mean, I think we make mistakes. I'm not a huge fan either way. But I think I that happens. It's emotion of the game.
I wonder if he was bumping into Taylor Swift dance floor.
That's true. And I'll tell you what though. Do you watch Super Bowl? Because I thought it was really boring. I thought it was a boring game. Even though it was an overtime game, I thought it was boring. I don't want to say it was fixed, but I thought all along, okay, Chiefs will win this in overtime as it got close. Like, Chiefs are going to win this. It's almost like.
I thought they'd win the kind of last play, but overtime, the same kind of thing. The commercials were kind of lame.
Lame, really lame. Yeah. Just celebrities now, just selling stuff. Where's the creativity?
Like the whole one with Tom Brady and Matt Damon and Dunkin' Donuts.
They're all just trying to be viral, and it's just, I don't know, man. I wish hockey had an equivalent to that. I mean, I don't. They don't. Cool. It's a huge event. The game itself, though, was. I didn't think it was a great game at all.
Yeah, especially those two quarterbacks. I like Purdy a lot. I think he's a good quarterback. Does he score 19 points? Although the defense is supposed to be pretty good too. I'm not big at that, but I've had enough of Taylor Swift. That's enough. I'm not trying to blame her, but it's not her fault. She's going to the game with all that lipstick on.
It's just, I don't get it. People get upset by it. It's like, well, why do you care? It's just a fan at the Gilead. It doesn't have any impact on anything.
Do you think she puts lipstick on like every 5 minutes or something like that to get the lips like that?
I never think about it that deeply, Tom.
Well, but you have to. Come on. Whenever you think of Taylor Swift, you're like, all you see is her lips, like kissing a paint can.
Well, my one daughter's a big fan. She's got, you would like her. She's got, her country songs are excellent. You'd probably like them.
Yeah.
Her first couple albums were country, and they were good, like really good. Yeah. Now she's a pop singer, but you're not a big fan. She's not Johnny Cash, so it's not your...
She's not, not Wayne Newton, not George Strait.
Wayne Newton?
Oh, yeah,
Wayne Newton's good. You're a Wayne Newton fan?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah.
I did not see that coming. Yeah. Really? Mr. Las Vegas.
Mr. Las Vegas.
Wow, with that voice, you like Wayne Newton?
I do for some reason, yeah.
Wow.
I said the guy, too. Who's the blind singer? I don't know if he's alive now.
Roy Orbison.
Roy Orbison, yes, like him, too. He actually sang opening night when Wayne Gretzky came to the LA Kings. He sang. I was standing beside Paul Fenton, who's Tyler Scope now, general manager, and he turns to me and goes, who's that? It's Roy Orbison, you idiot. He didn't know who Roy Orbison was.
I don't want to say that you've told that story on the show a few times.
But there's some guy in Ukraine that hasn't watched our show, and he's going, wow, that's a great story.
That's a great point. That's a great point. To our listener and our friends in Romania and Finland who've become listeners lately, there's a story for you about Paul Fenton, Roy Orbison, and Tom Laidlaw.
Man, we have fun in Finland. We were in Finland for training camp my second year in the league. Virimäki, the place is Virimäki, is a training site. Oh, man.
Yes, we've talked about it because we had Ulf Nilsson on. You talked about how you were there with Bobby Hull.
Bobby Hull was there. Yeah. Went to Sweden, too. Yep, we played in Stockholm, Sweden, with Alfie and Anders there. I can tell you a good story about it. We had a party after Bobby Hull was there. I would do whatever Bobby Hull told me to do. Like, he was that kind of legendary guy.
So, I think you might have told this one already, but he was like full-on Bobby Hull at that time, right? He was...
Yeah, he'd retired and was coming back. No, I didn't tell the story. Well, so we had a party. A bunch of girls were there. Bobby Hull told me to go take my clothes off and go sit in this girl's lap.
Okay. Now, wait, hold on. And did you do it?
Yeah. See, you think I tell all this stuff. Oh, you told all these stories. I hadn't told that story before.
But now Bobby Hull, who also, you said several times, you famously met when you were a kid. Your dad somehow wrangled you into Maple Leaf Gardens. You spoke with him. He spent some time with you. Now you're like, I don't know, 15 years later, he's like, hey, kid, who I met at Maple Leaf Gardens with his farmer dad, go take your clothes off and sit on that stripper's lap. And you're like, okay, but...
She wasn't even a stripper.
It's a regular woman. It's a civilian.
Regular woman sitting. Yeah, we're up in our hotel room having a big party. And he told me, obviously we'd had a few libations at that point, but he says, I'll never forget, Bobby Hull saying to me, Donnie, go take your clothes off, go sit in that girl's lap. About a question asked. Just go. Bobby Hull told me to do it, so.
And now I have to put the E on this episode. We started with my son on the show now, being a friendly family moment. Now we have to put the E on it because Laidlaw is naked with his junk out sitting on some civilian's lap in a hotel room in Finland.
I love the way you described that. That was actually.
Thanks, Bobby Hull. No. Hey, rest in peace, Mr. Hull. But yeah, God, it sounds like that was a fun year. But he wasn't good enough. They tried to get him to play with Nielsen and Hedberg, right? Magic.
Yeah, I just, he'd been retired. It wasn't there. About that, what an experience that was to have training camp with him, with Bobby Hull there, the stories and everything. Just, yeah.
Now, he famously wore a wig. Did he have, did you see him like take it on and off? Did you see, how did he prepare the thing?
That's a great question. I can't remember. Did he wear a wig too? Oh, that's right. He did.
Absolutely.
Not as bad as Chico Meshes, though, right?
Glenn Chico Resch and Billy Smith, the Islanders goaltending tandem, who both wore hair pieces throughout their careers.
But Chico's is awful. I mean, that's...
He still wears it.
Doesn't he have friends that say to him, like, Chico, that you don't
know. You don't talk about it, Tom. Like, imagine you had a big boil on your cheek. Everyone would be like, oh, well, he's just got that boil. Just deal with it, you know?
No, somebody would say something. No. Before I got my teeth fixed, my front tooth was brown. And right around in the bed, Ron Duguay was there. And he was very nice, a real gentleman about it. He says, Tom, you know, you can get your teeth fixed, you know.
Of all the people to point that out, I'm not shocked even a smidge that it was Duguay who pointed that out for you.
I know. But he was very nice about it. Yeah. And at first, because I got hit in the tooth like when I was a kid, like 7 or 8 years old, and it's just over the years, got more
just down. Around.
So I never really noticed it because it just happened over such a period of time. And then I went home and looked in the mirror, and then I told like this dentist family that was coaching the son.
Yeah, yeah.
The mother came.
You should have gone to Clint Malarchuk, though, because he's the horse dentist, and that would have probably been more apropos for what you needed at the time. So,
that's a good point by you. How do you decide to be a horse? Do we ask him how he decided to be a horse dentist?
We did. He just got into equine therapy and became a horse dentist, and he really liked your teeth. He said they did good work. So,
yeah,
there it is. But I want to tell a quick story about Duguay, because I happened to be at an event with Duguay at the Palisades Center. And he's great because he was taking pictures with the mom and the ladies. Right. And after the pictures, he'd say, let me see your phone. He'd swipe through and say, okay, use that one.
Yeah, so it's great. He's so wow. Iris Brand. Yeah, I used to make fun of him, but I realized that's it. That's his brand. Like, it's how he looks. It's his brand. So he's very aware of it. It's funny. James Patrick was telling a story. He was in Winnipeg, and Dukes was in for some alumni game or whatever. And I think we were at the airport or the rink, and James went up. They played together for several years. Then James went up to Dukes, like, you know, talking to him like your old buddies, your old teammates and everything. Dukes had no idea who he was. He didn't recognize him a bit. Yeah, it was just hilarious. Yeah.
Cool. There you go. That's
you're good. You know, and I, again, like, I used to make fun of him all the time, but to his credit, that's who he is. He is the way he looks, is like his hair, his skin. So that's, you know, he's very aware.
Yeah, no,
I think he did a kid wanted a selfie with him one time, and he wouldn't do the selfie. And I said, Dukes, what are you, jerk? Just take a picture with the kid. He said, Tom, I can't control those pictures.
Well,
so, and yeah, he didn't want any bad pictures of himself. So,
well, that's what I said. He was telling the people, okay, no, he goes, delete that one, use that one. So it's like I would photo editing final say on all these pictures that fans are taking. So that's great, man. That's a different level of just, you know, cool. So that's
awesome. He is self-aware. Yes. Yeah. Oh, God.
And speaking of, it's still what?
I used to smell the coconuts on the bench there. He used to have that coconut smelling, whatever, some stuff in his hair, organizer, whatever it is.
Wow. Incredible. And speaking of someone who is self-aware, but also in different ways, we're going to have Charlie Cimarron. He's going to be a great guest. People, I think we're going to love this show. Can't wait to hear what Charlie has to say.
Yeah, what a funny man, too. Great, good career. God, I remember playing against him. So I remember, like, young, too. You know, he's got it in L.A. He's scoring 50 goals. He's got the Playboy model wife. A bit.
Yeah. Well, let's get to it, man.
Yeah. Let's get after it.
Is this the biggest head you've had on your show yet?
No. Look at Laidlaw. What do you mean?
Look at my melon. You've got hair still in it.
You're sitting 15 feet away from your... I'm sitting right on it.
We've had some big heads. So, like, Richie Pilon's got a big melon, too.
How's that? This is new technology for me. I don't do this stuff.
There you go. Good.
Actually, I had a corporate one that kicked me off because I couldn't get on. And all my kids have left the house, so who's going to fix it?
How old are your kids?
I have a 40-year-old daughter.
Oh, my God.
And I'm sleeping with a 60-year-old. When would that ever happen in the past? Right?
Well, you are old sleeping with a 60-year-old. I thought you'd be in the 20s or something.
I got a 40-year-old with the first one, and then with my present and last one, I have a 20, soon to be 28 and 26, boy, girl.
So you have remarried? You were married?
Yes.
So twice, okay. But you still haven't got divorced?
Coming up on 100 years.
Total.
No, it's actually coming up on 29.
Wow.
So pretty good.
That's amazing for a hockey player to get married.
And then we got an 8-year-old granddaughter.
Oh, nice. Like twice as much as yours combined.
Yeah, I know. I've got two divorces, and my total is like 15 years, I guess.
Yeah. No, I'm on my last one for sure.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tom, we got a great show today. We got one of the members of the legendary Triple Crown line. 300 and how many goals? 347 goals in the NHL, something like that.
I'm not quite sure. I remember every one though. If you ask me which one, what pick a number, and I'll tell you how I scored it.
All right, then I'm going to quiz you.
Here we go.
So my rookie year in the league, 1980-81, we come into L.A., Triple Crown line. I'm in front of the net with Charlie Simmons. I think I'm this big, tough guy. I'm going to scare the crap out of him, you know, push him away. And he starts talking to me. He says, hey, Tommy, how you doing? Nice to meet you. You know, I'm thinking, I got my best friend here now, Charlie Simmons. And then he steps out to the high slot. Like Dave Taylor shot him, passing the puck, and shoots it a one-timer and stands there laughing at me. Like,
minus one, Laidlaw.
Oh, God. I'll never forget that, too. I got sucked in. Oh.
Well, I didn't announce our guest. So our guest today is, as you mentioned, Charlie Simmer.
Yeah, I didn't recognize Tom for the first 3 years because the only thing I ever saw of him was this cross check across my back and my numbers, and they just didn't skate away. I just saw his number. That was it.
You're standing there laughing at me where you score goals, too. Charlie Simmer, how you doing, brother? We really don't know each other that much, although we played against each other, so great to see you.
Well, yeah, I think we know each other. You're my best buddy.
Yeah. When you're scoring goals, yeah.
You're on the ice for a lot of Charlie's goals, Tom. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, he's definitely one of those guys that who else is like that? The Joey Mullen was like this. I guess like he's lucky. He's not really that good, but then he keeps scoring goals all the time. I think, well, yeah, he is. Yeah.
Rick Middleton, another one.
Rick Middleton, yes, that's the one. Yeah.
Well, Nifty scored more goals by not touching the puck than he did touching. He was 3 years I was in Boston. He'd go on a one-on-two and skate between both defensemen, never touch the puck. It just kind of followed him around. He's falling down, and he tips it up over the shoulder. And he's like, "Oh, nice goal, Nifty." It's just routine for you,
isn't that true? He kept doing it all the time. Think, okay, I guess he's unlucky. It just keeps going for him. So, yeah. Where are you now? Are you living in Houston?
Well, I'm in Lakeway, which is about 30 minutes west of Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas, very good. Yeah, and you're still in the oil business, correct?
Doing a little bit of work. I got sucked back into it. I was kind of furloughed and I thought retired in the beginning of COVID, when my past company kind of let me go after I trained a couple young guys, and all of a sudden, I'm unemployed. And while I was kind of close to retirement, and so I was saying, okay, it's not bad, but it ended up during COVID, you couldn't volunteer, you couldn't help out, you couldn't really do anything except get in my wife's way. I played a lot of golf. I wasn't very good at it still. And then I'm trying to help her in the kitchen, you know, let me cook tonight, you know, and then, good friends of mine from a company that I helped, down in Texas from Canada called and said, hey, do you want to come back to work part time? So I said, yeah, that'd be great. And, end up now I'm full time and thinking, how'd I get sucked back into it? But it's a lot of fun. It's the closest industry that I've been with that is to a sports team, to a hockey team, the way they pull for each other. I mean, you know, care for each other and, it's kind of interesting. They know who you are, what your talent. I mean, it's kind of fun to be around these guys.
That's cool. Let's go. Where are you from originally? Where's home?
Home is Terrace Bay, Ontario. It's about 2 hours up the lake from Thunder Bay. So 300 miles from Sault Ste. Marie and 140 from Thunder Bay. So
right on there.
The lake. And it's beautiful in the summer. Man, I guess it's beautiful in the winter too, but it's a little bit chillier in the winter.
And where did you play junior hockey?
I played 2 years in Kenora on Tier 2, and then I mysteriously got drafted in the 29th round to the Sioux Greyhounds as a 19-year-old back in 1973-74, and the funny story about that is Angelo Bimbacco.
Yeah.
He's been around Sioux. Unfortunately, he passed away, but he's been around the Sioux hockey for decades, or almost centuries, I guess. And so we'd always joke about it. And I made the team and I did quite well as a 19-year-old. And so years passed, of course, playing the NHL and going back and talking to him all the time. And he's like, oh, I knew you would make it all the time. I says, you're unbelievable, this and that. And I says, yeah, and that's why you drafted me in the 29th round. And of course, his story was, well, you're way up in Kenora. Nobody even saw you there. So we knew we had lots of time on you.
Oh, but, that's funny.
Well, quite a character. I mean, of course, Esposito's on the team, the junior team back then. So there's just no shortage of stories and characters for sure.
Right. So you did well in junior, and then you got drafted by, were you drafted by the Kings?
I got drafted by the California Seals.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And I laugh, and they say, well, what number did you get? All the people ask me now. I said, well, I got drafted 39th. And they're like, well, that's just outside the first round. I says, no, there was only 11 teams back then.
Is that what it was? Just 11 teams back then when you drafted?
There were, how many teams were there? So there were 12.
12 teams.
So I was the third pick in the third round. And that year was kind of funny because that was the first time in a while that they allowed 18-year-olds to be drafted. So technically, I lost a whole round because of they had to draft them in the first two rounds.
Okay.
So there were some good 18-year-olds that came out of that, and some just weren't ready, obviously. I mean, that's the characters. You look at the guys that are 18 that can make it and have made it, Bork and Mario and Potvin and guys like that. And then for every one of those, there's eight they're knocking it.
Totally, yeah. Those guys are freaky. So I mean that in a very good way. Like to be 18 years old and be mature enough to play in the NHL, physically and mentally, I agree.
So of course, those guys are driving the team bus at 16. So,
yeah. I see Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid and those guys come in too, and just like they're so polished and they get in front of the camera and they're like, geez, I wasn't like that until I was.
It took you 45 years to get polished in front of the camera.
You think I'm polished now?
Marble mouth going at all the time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. I'm nonstop. Yeah. Nonstop talk.
Oh, I want to ask Charlie this time. We had Dennis Marukan on, who was on your team with the Seals. And then
Pee-wee,
yes. And he told us how in the playoffs, if the owner said to you, or the GM said, if you guys don't win, the franchise is moving. So how was that experience when you guys went from California to Cleveland? It had to be bizarre, right, for a hockey player?
Well, first of all, you look at it, Southern California, Cleveland, Ohio. Yeah, you're looking at you. But it was disappointing because it had finally, after, 67, and so that would be 74, 75, 76 season. And we'd finally had some solid people in the front office. I mean, I'd only been there 2 years, so horror stories from the years before the White Skates, guys missing curfew, guys drunk on the bench. But they finally had some good leadership in the office, and then they had Jack Tex Evans was our coach, tougher nails. And I love coaches like that back then. You know, Tommy McVie, guys like that. You play for those guys. I mean, that's the way I was brought up. And the fans were coming back. I mean, we usually sold out with all the big teams coming to town. But, you know, just slowly through that year, we won a lot more games than we did the year before. And then all of a sudden, it was like, you know, well we're ready for next year. And George Gunn and his brother owned the team by then. And, of course, he just built the Richfield Coliseum outside of Cleveland, which is in the middle of nowhere. It was in the middle of a field. And all of a sudden, bang, we're going to Cleveland. And it was like, well, it's a hockey town. We're going. I remember going for our first Chamber of Commerce thing in training camp, go downtown to this big function and all that to promote the team. And it was the windiest day I think I've ever seen in Cleveland. And you go by the old refineries and all that, and they had the big piles of coal. And it was just like a black fog blowing across the freeway. And you could hear all the veterans going, we left California for this, you know. And unfortunately, it just didn't work. The building was too far away. It was a beautiful building, you know, ahead of its time. But it was in the middle of a field. And you couldn't get off the interstate. You had to go through these little towns like Hudson, Ohio, and North Akron. And it was just, it was disastrous from the start. Our opening game was against, home game was against the Montreal Canadiens. Mm-hmm. I think they had just won three out of the four in a row. So you're thinking this is going to be great. And we had like 7,500 people show up. It was good. From that point on, it just went downhill, unfortunately. And I think it was only 2 years. I only lasted part of a year there. And I was sent back down to Salt Lake and then eventually bought out. But, it was too bad because it really was picking up a lot of momentum. You know, of course, the Guns lost their team, and then they joined up with Minnesota for all those years. And they ended up getting another team, of course, which is the San Jose Sharks, which was about 30 miles from where they started.
Right.
And, of course, a very successful franchise in San Jose. We knew there were hockey fans there. It was just a matter of getting the product on the ice.
I got to go back to one story. Now, guys were getting drunk on the bench in California.
Well, not really, but I mean, there was a lot of guys not into it. I mean, they were so talented. I remember Joey Johnson. He was one of the most talented players I've ever seen. And he got on a breakaway once and just picked the puck up at the blue line and just started bouncing it all the way in like a lacrosse player scored and just sat down. And then a couple more games, he wouldn't score any more goals. And it was just once Jack Tex Evans there, he was getting control of everybody. Of course, he was tougher than nails. You wouldn't want to mess with him. Everybody seemed to be pulling together on that second year with Jack there. And then after that, I mean, there was just no accountability at that time, unfortunately. And once they did have it, they moved it.
Yeah. All right. So now you got bought out by Cleveland. And then how'd you get to LA then? How'd you get to LA?
Well, It was, of course, I'm thinking that was my third year, and I'd spent most 3 years up and down in the minors, and very successful scoring in the minors, but seemed every time I got called up, I was a checking center. So I, probably couldn't check my hat, but that's what they had me at. So obviously there weren't a lot of pickings for a guy that just got released by the Cleveland Barons. So I had two offers, one from Los Angeles and one from Buffalo. And I was going LA, Buffalo, LA, Buffalo. Yeah. And not for what you think, Tom. I mean, at that time, I was thinking, well, I got to find a team I can make the roster. And Buffalo had just finished, I think, the playoffs with the Flyers. They lost, I think they lost in the, or they had that group with, they just lost the Flyers in the finals. I mean, they had such a great team. And I thought I had a better chance of making Los Angeles and exactly the same money, which was huge, huge. I mean, I was almost ready to retire with that money. two-way contract. But, I just wanted to play. I still had it in my head. I thought I could make it. So I ended up going to L.A.
And now you end up on one of the most famous lines in the history of the National Hockey League, the Triple Crown line with Marcel Dion and Dave Taylor. How'd that happen?
Well, it took a little while. First year in camp in L.A., had a really good camp, but unfortunately I was the only left winger on a two-way contract. And they brought in players. I think Schultz came in that year. They had some veteran left wingers they were doing okay, but they had a one-way contract. So I ended up getting sent down to the minors, to Springfield. I'm going, can you send me to Salt Lake City? It's a lot nicer Springfield. But, we started down there, Bob Berry was end of his career. He was actually playing that year down there. And we had Ted Harris was the head coach. So he got fired halfway through the year. They promoted Bob Berry. And I think I was either first or second left wing all-star in the American League that year. I got called up to L.A., I think three times for a total of four games and four shifts. And each time it was like, well, you didn't really show us anything. And so I'm going, and then I got, sent down and then finally out there saying, well, I think it was Ron Stewart was coaching. And he was like, I think you should maybe start thinking about another career. I'm like, I got another year of my contract. So I go to camp the next year. Bob Berry's coaching in L.A. now.
So what year is this now? Is this 1980 or no?
So this would be 78, 79.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm in my fifth year pro and go to camp, have a great camp. Bob Berry's coaching and he comes in. He said, I got to send you down. Unfortunately, it's just, again, it was about money. And he says, go down and play hard. So, I mean, that was my fifth year and I was kind of like, I'm back to Terrace Bay in the pulp and paper mill. I mean, that was my decision turning pro was either one or the other, make it or not. There was no really third alternative at that time. So I went down and I was having a pretty good year, not as good as the year before. And then January of 79. January 13th, I got called up. We go to Detroit, going to play in Detroit, the old Olympia. Uh-huh. Great game. Phenomenal building. It was just so much fun. I mean, excitement in there. You had to walk through the crowd from your dressing room to get to the, you're on the other side of the concourse and actually had to walk through.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, back then. And then the bus would come right to the door of the arena and open the door of the arena and the bus would open. You go in because it was not in a great area.
Oh.
So I get there and Bob Berry said, I said, just show me where you want me to sit on the bench and I'll stay out of the way. And I said, no, I'm going to play a little bit tonight. And that's when he put me on the line with Marcel and Davey.
Oh.
And of course, fortunately for me, Marcel was a first round pick, first pick a few years ago for Detroit. They had a little bit of fallout. So every time he went back to Detroit, he lit it up. So we go in there and we beat them 6-0 or whatever it was. We score all six goals. I get zero. I got a couple of assists. Well, someone at the back check with those two.
Sure, that's you. That's Charlie Simmer right there.
And then, which was great. I mean, I played a full game, which was exciting. And I hadn't done that since with the Seals a long time ago. So we go to Boston. We go into Boston. We beat them. And Springfield, obviously, is about 90 minutes away. So I had friends coming to pick me up because it was the end of a road trip. There were some injuries, and I just figured, everybody figured, well, once we get back to LA, a couple of days off, then, you know, these guys will come back. So we go into Boston, and I still hadn't scored, but I picked up a couple of assists. We beat Boston. And so I'm getting ready at the end of the game after. And he knew a lot of the friends that came to pick me up. So we were talking, and he said, yeah, he said, I got to send you back to Springfield. I said, no, I appreciate the opportunity, Bob. And he said, no, he said, I want you to pick up some clothes and get on a plane out to LA.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it was, I can't remember how many games were left. It was like 30 something or 30 that year. And when I turned pro, I said, if I can score 20 a year, that's good fishing. You were a player. If you could score 20.
Yep. Yep.
So I played the second half of the year, and I scored
21,
and which was like, okay. And next year, obviously, went to training camp. You're still paranoid that I wasn't going to make. Sure. I mean, wasn't going to make the team. So, but we started right from training camp, and I went from being told to find another job to leading the league in goals the next year. So, I mean, that's just, I mean, it's a phenomenal story, obviously. With Marcel and Davey, and to this day we're still great friends, and we talk about the fun we had, and there was no set plays. It was really weird that we would just, okay, Mars would say we need a couple, and sure enough, that shift to go out and get a couple.
So three really different players too, right? Like Dave Taylor, people don't know, like he was a mean guy out there. Like he just was like,
for his size. I mean, his first training camp, Marcel and we talked Glenn Golub and Dave Hutchison was on the team. Right. Back then, guys, Dan Maloney. And when Dave came out of Clarkson, he played, he got called up, or at the end of the year, he played a couple games in the minors for LA, you know, got his teeth knocked out in Fort Worth and this and that. Go to training camp the next year, and he was like 175 pounds.
Yeah.
Me.
Yeah.
First guy he goes after, he fights, is Dave Hutchison. All these guys, all the guys back then, you know, the veterans say, okay, let's just make it easy. Don't get hurt. We'll get through the, you know, and back then it was 3-4 week training camp.
Right.
And here's this kid, college kid, running everybody. And that's, we made the team. And from that point, obviously his career is phenomenal. 1,200 games in LA. And, but I mean, real tough games too. Marcel.
He can do it all. Yeah. Like with Dave though, he amazed me because we didn't play against him that often. You guys that often were in New York and you're LA. So you're playing against Dave and you really don't know that much about him. Not like today where you can watch all the games and the internet and everything. And I wasn't even doing anything to him. And all of a sudden, like, he crash kicked me in the face or something, like, dirty like that. And I'm looking like, what are you doing? And he just looked at you. He wouldn't talk very much. He's a quiet guy. And it was game time. He wouldn't back down from anybody. Yeah.
I asked him to do that for all the cross checks a month back.
There you go. Perfect.
Charlie, were you as shocked as the entire hockey world in 1987 when the great Marcel Dion was traded for a bag of pucks and Tom Laidlaw? Were you, how'd you handle that?
Well, Stu went here though.
I was gone by then. I was traded to Boston. And I think then I was in Pittsburgh. And it was tough to see because of what he had done for LA.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, it came down to a business decision. I mean, obviously, he wanted more money. And I think Rogie was the GM. Rogie didn't want to give him more money. And of course, then egos get involved. And unfortunately, it would have been nice to see him finish like Davey did in LA.
Well, it's terrible to say this. I don't know how you were when you got traded. Your ego kicks in when you get traded, right? So you want to know that you got traded for a good player, which Marcel certainly was a good player. But at that time, like he was like 90 years old at that point. But it's like not 90, but he was getting a little older, long in the tooth. So is that, I didn't know that. Did he demand a trade then?
Well, I think because that was when the start of unfortunately, the start of the big money that I missed started to come out. And I think he was trying to negotiate. And I think it got into, and Marcel and Rogie were good friends too. And that was the issue, right? It was like, what's going on here? Sit down, boys, and get it done. But I don't know if it was an out for LA to get, I wouldn't say get rid of Marcel, but, you know, to pass on some salary and this and that. And of course, everybody started looking at salaries and salary caps and things like that back then. So I'm not sure if it was because of that and it gave them an out. But obviously, Marcel is a very strong personality guy and he knows what he's worth and he knows how hard he's done and what he's done for a franchise. So I don't know the whole gist of that. And I never asked Marcel, but I know it hurt him a lot to be traded out of LA.
And where were you guys practicing in LA? Were you at Culver City then?
Yeah, we were at Culver City, the ski lift ice that went up like moguls. And I think right after that, I think Luke once he got established, he built that facility way out in the valley. Yeah, but it was still Culver City.
Man, so people don't know you think you're in the NHL, you know, and a lot of these practice rinks are just, there's nothing to them. Like the ice was like, Charlie's joking around, the ice was terrible. You know, locker room was up. Wasn't the locker room upstairs? You have to go upstairs.
Upstairs, yeah. We had the one exercise bike that everybody hung their jacket on, and we had the one dumbbell that kept the door open because it was too hot up there.
That conditioning was a bit.
That was the workout facility, and now you look at the great facilities players have now. It's phenomenal. The chefs and the facilities. It's nice to see how it's progressed.
Do you think back to the way the game was for us when we played? How, like the equipment, the training methods, the things we knew, didn't know. Like now I work on my core all the time. Before somebody said like core, I think, what is a core?
How many gears do we get after each game, and are there any pizza going?
I know. That's
conditionist, right?
There's a couple of things in LA that we shouldn't gloss over. One is the miracle in Manchester, but two is, and you might not know this, but Charlie's a bit of a rock star, and he had a record out with Marcel Dion and Dave Taylor.
Way before MTV, we sold over 500,000 copies, so we have a gold record.
Wow.
Technically, and still no residuals from MTV, nothing. We did the video, everything, of course, with the Rangers, did the other side. It was a lot of fun.
Now, I may be touching on something that's a little touchy subject, that you're now remarried, but your first wife, she was a little famous too, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was, yeah.
Go ahead. Okay, I'll say it then. I put him in a tough spot. He's a Playboy model, correct?
Yes, right, yeah.
So we'll move on from that subject, see you're remarried. You know, we've done, how many shows have we done now, Tom? Close to 90 shows?
This is 88.
And what do you think the divorce rate is amongst guys that they've, how many guys have stayed married? Like Charlie's
75 to 80%.
Yeah, no, it's been good. I mean, good. Unfortunately, it's part of the game, I guess, especially when you get near the end of your career. Unfortunately, it didn't last, but out of it, I end up with a beautiful young lady daughter, and we have a granddaughter now. And then I upgraded, and now I've been married for 29 years.
Wow. Technically now that first one now it gets erased, because if you stay married that long the second time around, that's the rules, right? The second one, now if it stays that long, first one gets erased. So it is. So you're not in that category.
No, it's been, you go through, you're young, and a lot of things happen in your, and I think finally you get kicked in the head and you go, wait a minute, okay, got to figure this out now. And I mean, we were involved with hockey so much, right? I mean, it was, everything was revolved around hockey. So the aspects of life, you take it for granted or whatever, but it's turned out well for me. I'm a blessed man, three children, and a beautiful granddaughter. So I have no complaints coming out of hockey.
Isn't that true? And I don't think I really realized it until, I think I partly knew it, but we started doing this show, Tom and I, and doing the show, there's been some of the stories of my own stories and other guys. Tom will look at me and goes, man, you guys are messed up when you're playing. It's just a messed up world. We don't realize how messed up a world it really is, because that's all we've ever known, right? And then you get out of it and you start to get a real job and a real relationship, and you think, oh, geez, what was I doing for all that?
Well, and it's funny, back then, it really wasn't a business. I mean, we didn't back in the 70s, I didn't make a ton of, my brother was making more money in the mill and when I was in the miners, and I'm riding buses and this and that, but it was the game. You wanted to play. I mean, I wanted to play in the NHL, and I was going to do anything I could to get in there. And then of course you do run into some pretty good characters, and if you're weak-willed like I am, sometimes you get sucked into the funny stuff, but it's a, you can't beat the life. I mean, I wouldn't change anything. Everybody says, you know, if you would have done this and this. I said, look, I scored 50 goals in the NHL. I mean, that's more than I ever thought I would do. I actually played a game in the NHL, which was what my goal was. And then the people you've met, it lifelong friends. Now, I mean, obviously the business part of it is a big part of it now, and good for them. I mean, they make good money. They train. They've got all the facilities, but that's just the progression of life. I mean, look at the guys way before me, you know, that I think Gordie Howell's pension was, after turning 52, was $16,000 a year or whatever it was. It was tiny, but, you know, the poor guy, he played till he was 52, and people were scared of him that year. I remember playing against him.
I know. I was glad he retired when I came. I started in 80, 81. In fact, thank God he retired. I didn't want to play against Gordie Howell. Yeah, he was nasty. So how many years, so you played in the All-Star game in LA then, right? You had that one year?
We played, one of my biggest disappointments was the year before, we'd all three of us made the All-Star team. So that'd be 79-80. And it was in Detroit. It was the opening of the Joe Louis. And that was Gordie Howe's last year. And all three of us made the All-Star team. And I blew my knee out just before that. And Davey had hurt his shoulder. So we didn't get to play in the All-Star game, which was a big disappointment because we would have had a chance to see, you know, with Gordie and his last year in an All-Star game in Detroit. And Marcel was there too. So how fun that would have been. But missed that. The next year was in L.A. And we were voted first team All-Star. So we got to start the game, the three of us introduced together at our home crowd.
I saw that. I'll never forget that video. Was really cool. You guys getting up together.
Yeah, but the funny part, of course, we're in L.A. and Jerry Buss is our owner. And of course, the night before they have the dinner downtown in Bel Air and this and that. And of course, it was like, okay, we're going. You know, Jerry's got limos for everybody. Next thing you know, it's 4:35 in the morning. It was like, and, you know, everybody's you know, guys from the East Coast. I mean, it's winter, and now you're in L.A. and you're palm trees and limos and everything. So we get to the rink the next morning. Scotty Bowman's our coach, and everybody, I mean, Ricky Middleton, Ray Bourque, all the guys are in the locker room just hanging their heads going, oh, Scotty puts us through a full practice, like balls to the wall practice. And everybody's going, what the hell is going on here? So then, okay, you know, when you got the strategy and everybody's like, well, we're just going to go out and have some fun, right? But of course, the game starts. We start minus one. First shift, and you're just going, we get back to the bench and Scotty's looking at us and he's thinking, how can I bench these three guys in L.A.? And obviously didn't. We regrouped a little. We didn't win, but and unfortunately we didn't score any goals. But Mike Lewitt was playing that night. And he was pretty sharp for the other team. He got, I think he won the star of the game and all that. But yeah, but it was a lot of fun.
Now, did you play with Rogie then? He was still playing, correct? You were there?
He was my first training camp. He was there that first year. He was, and then he ended up getting did he go to Detroit or Boston right after that? And then Mario Lessard came in. They had a mixed match. Mario had a couple good years, and it fell off. And then after that, it was just a who's who of goalies up until probably Kelly Rudy got there.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's funny. I felt so bad for Rogie. As you know, Rogie's such a great guy, like quiet, you know, gentleman and everything. And he was GM when I was out there in L.A. and we had training camp. Wayne was there. We had training camp in Hull. So, of course, you know, he had the meeting the first morning there. We had the physicals the first morning there. And then you were supposed to come back at night for the meeting. So, you know, we got a veteran team. It's Larry Robinson, Wayne Gretzky, myself, Dave Taylor, John Tonelli, all these guys. So we all go to the strip joint in the afternoon in Hull. So we go into the private room. I can't remember what it was called. You know, they get the camera there. So we took the girl's panties off and put it over the camera so nobody can see what's going on. The whole team's in there. I remember I was sitting with Timmy Waters and they said, we're drinking beer all afternoon. We got to go back to this meeting. He said, we shouldn't be doing this. Well, where's Wayne? We can do whatever we want to do with Wayne. And we go back for the meeting. And it was a great bonding thing for the guys. But poor Rogie's trying to have this serious meeting. And we're all like a bunch of little kids. I felt it was funny at the time. But then you wake up next morning and go, oh, poor Rogie, because he's trying to have this serious meeting.
Yeah.
We had fun though.
There was quite a team, you guys, when they put it together late 80s in LA. I mean, and especially in that environment, because you're not looking at the intensity that you have back east. I mean, you get some coverage. And I think one year we had the LA Times hockey reporter came out of the garden and home and garden section. You know, and knew nothing about hockey, but you're the hockey guy now and traveling with us. So it was kind of interesting where you could, obviously the intensity now winning the Stanley Cups there is picked up, but you could go anywhere and not recognized or have any pressure.
What was that famous quote, Charlie? He said there's 100,000 Canadians in Los Angeles and they all hate hockey.
Yeah, well, Jack Ken Cook came in. He said, I'm building the team here because there's 250,000 Canadians in LA, and of course the first couple of years were pretty tough in LA, and that was when the coach came out and said, yeah, but they all hate hockey.
The other joke was someone said, what time's the game start? And they said, what time can you make it?
Right? Yeah. The late arriving LA
crowd. I love New York. So when I got traded, it wasn't that I didn't like LA, I love New York. I didn't want to get traded, but we had a great bunch of guys, Jay Wells, Phil Sykes, and Jimmy Fox, and all those guys. And I'll never forget, I rented a home in Palos Verdes, Rolling Hills Estates. And we had a pool and a hot tub in the backyard. So the first Christmas I was there, I was sitting in the hot tub having a cocktail. maybe this isn't so bad after all, right?
Yeah.
Cool. I loved LA. It was great. I loved New York. I loved LA. It was two good cities. How long did you spend in LA?
We were there 7 years, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then, I spent some time in Oakland. So my most of my career, it was California, which is kind of strange. 2 years in Oakland, 7 in LA. And then when I retired, I moved back to San Diego and ended up coaching there for a couple of, assistant coaching for a couple of years. And then went back up and did well in the Kings Montreal finals. I did broadcasting there. And then I did the first 3 years of broadcasting with the Ducks. So, I mean, California is pretty familiar to me.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Were you there in San Diego when Don Waddell was there?
Yes. Don was the GM. And then, so the first 2 years I was a player assistant coach. I think I played probably about 8 games, but it was fun. I scored the first goal when he came back in the new San Diego history. So that was pretty good. Great story. We had Ron Duguay show up.
Right. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So it was, and he was, Kim Alexis, he was married to. So, I mean, coming from, from knowing him in the past, obviously having some drinks and everything, he was such a health nut back then when he came to San Diego. I think he showed up in his roles at practice. And, of course, Duke's the long hair and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And then crazy legs, just skating like Jack the Wind, funny. So we get ready for the first game, and it's in the minors. And I just played a lot of games in the minors in my first 5 years. So it was kind of, I know what's going on. And he's going out, he's got his hair flowing, he's got this and that, and he's got his earring in and this and that. Going just ready to line up. I said, Duke, he says, you got to take that earring out. He's like, what do you mean? He said, you got to take that earring out. He says, someone's going to pull it out. No, it's going to be all right. Come back the next period, took it out. You could see guys.
Oh, is that right? Oh, really? They were trying to pull it out?
Well, it was the young guys, right? Trying to, take a shot at Ron Duguay. That was funny. But it was, of course, he, and it helped San Diego with the attendance and everything, of course. Sure. But that was a funny story. So San Diego was good. Donnie was there. And then, obviously, after the first couple of years, Fred Comrie bought the team from Edmonton.
Oh.
And they brought in Rick Dudley. And I think that was the start of Rick Duds. And I think Lindy Ruff was his assistant. So, and that's when I got into broadcasting and said, you're not going to be a very good coach, so let's go try something else.
Did you not like coaching, or just didn't think that was your thing?
It was fun. It was fun. I don't know. In the pros, it'd be a little bit tougher, I think. And I think my strengths were more teaching than anything. So, I mean, like assistant coach, I think would have been fine that way. But I don't have the temperament to be a head coach for sure.
Yeah, no kidding. Think about it too. Your career is dependent on a bunch of muttheads like we were when we played, right? I think back. I want to coach me.
But I enjoyed that. Like, I helped the young guys in San Diego quite a bit, and I enjoyed that quite a bit. It was a lot of fun.
You know, I found playing in the minors was harder than playing in the National Hockey League, because for me as a defenseman, I was that guy. Yeah. Right, because there's a bunch of automatics. Like, I'd come around the back of the net, there'd be always in the NHL, you knew the guy was going to be on the hash marks, pass it to him, my job's done. And then you do that in the minors. I've come back and neck a couple of times, and I go to the shoot, pass it to the hash mark, and nobody's there. And they're coming back to the bench and saying, you played in the NHL.
It definitely was more simpler in the NHL not as confusing, but I agree with you 100% on that one.
So what's the farthest you guys went in the playoffs with LA?
Unfortunately, just the second round. We lost to, we beat Edmonton on that one series in 82. Mm-hmm. We went up against Vancouver, and we just couldn't get by Brodeur. He was the Richard Brodeur, and I think they went all the way to the finals, I think, against and lost, or the finals to Chicago or something. Oh, yeah. Or that's the year they lost to the Rangers, I think, wasn't it?
No, Islanders.
Islanders, sorry.
Islanders. Yeah. That's right.
And Brodeur was just unbelievable. We just couldn't get anything by him in the second round. But that was the furthest I got.
Well, I want to tell my honest about the brawl in 1981 with you guys. Because, Charlie, who did you pair up with in that when Marcel Dion was getting pumped up by Ed Hospodar?
I was up in the luxury suite sucking on a cocktail.
There you go.
That's right. Yeah, you didn't play. That's where you were hurt.
No, I had broke my leg that year. That was the year. That was the year before. I broke my leg March 1st, and then obviously that year we had a really good, I think we finished 100 and some points or something. And obviously going up against the Rangers and a very physical team. And we were never a really physical team in LA. We tried to get guys to you know, compliment everybody, but yeah, that was kind of tough to watch sitting up there.
Yeah. Do you remember when somebody was down on the bench on your team, they grabbed Eddie Hospodar from behind. He was on the ice and Nick Fetillo came out of the stands and grabbed the poor guy. I don't know who it was. And just ragdolled him. It's a hilarious video to watch.
Oh, really? I hadn't seen it. I don't know if I've seen that video. But, Nick could do that.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a big, tough team. Eddie Hospodar, Chris Katsopoulos, Barry Beck. You know, dudes could fight. Gress could fight. Yeah, it was... Yeah, back then I could.
Did you get in a lot of fights, Charlie?
When you're younger, you do. When you get a little older, it's like I always laugh at this. I went and did the NHL protocol concussion thing, and they said I had 29 professional fights. So I won them all. There's no video, but and of course being a big guy back then, that was during the Flyers. Everybody, you know, they're saying you've got to fight. You're a big guy and this and that, and you know, and I could do it, but if it's not in your, I mean, some guys love it, and some guys that's their job, but. I remember a memorable fight where I thought maybe I could do this. It was Mario Marwa, you know, pretty tough.
He's tough and gutted. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, he's like Tom Laidlaw, just hammering me in the back, just cross check. So finally that was enough. And I turned around, away we went, and I dropped him and started swinging. And I don't know what I did, but I did something right. I got him in a spin and I'm spinning and I'm just hammering, and down he went. I'm looking like, you know, I'm going, that's the belt. I got the belt. We're going in the penalty. You're sitting there. I'm feeling pretty good about myself. I think, well, maybe I could do a little bit more of this, you know? And he's tapping on the window. He's like pointing. He said, we're going again. I'm going, let's go. I mean, come on. I just thank you. Get on the ice. We square off. Next thing you know, I'm looking at the lights. He's looking down at me. He says, now we're even. Didn't go on. Just no idea what happened. And, you know, I get you know, in the box, my chin's starting to hurt, my jaw's a little bit sore, and I get back to the bench, and I go, I don't know what happened. I did so well in the first fight. He says, you didn't know he's left-handed? The first fight, I must have had him spinning the wrong way, and he couldn't throw from the left. Of course, in the second one, I grab his right shoulder, I pull back like I'm going to hammer, and next thing, I just one punch, just straight left to me, and down I went. I went, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore.
I know.
Isn't that true? Like we laughed about it. And again, he was an honest player, so he wasn't dirty or anybody. He eagled up really quick, and I went, okay, that's good.
Yeah. Is that true? Like you get there and you're tough enough, you can fight, you show you can do it. But then every game, you know, there's Islanders, there's Clark Gillies and Bob Nyström. You go to Philly, there's like five guys. Boston, there's 10 guys. After a while, you go, oh, God, like every game, especially for a guy like you, there's talent to score goals. Like you really didn't have to fight either.
Yeah, no, it's you know, you kind of got to find your way through it for sure, because and of course now with the rules and everything is so much different, but boy, back there it was just like, you know, some of the young guys said, well, you guys were so slow and you couldn't play in today's game, and you go, well, I like to see you go around Ed Van Impe, and he cross-checks, breaks his stick over your arm. Well, he'd get suspended. No, he says he gets 2 minutes in the penalty box or slash, and then you come right back out. He's going to do it again. You know, so you know, there's certain aspects of the game that you can't. I'm not going to compare myself with the Bobby or Gordie Howe or Ted Lin. I mean, you just enjoy the area you were in and be grateful you got to play.
Yeah, Tom. Full credit to Charlie. Just about the fighting. He fought. He took on Rod Langway, which is impressive. Huh? But then you also fought Brian Propp and Börje Salming. So how do you fight Börje Salming? How does that happen?
Well, there wasn't much to it. He's strong.
Yeah.
I can't even remember. Prop was proper. And that was, I mean, I think that was a nice hug fest, maybe. And same with him with Salming. I mean, it was just, I think it's in front of the net. You turn around, you're not sure who's cross checking your hit. And you sooner or later, you've had enough. And I believe probably no punches were thrown in both those fights.
Yeah. I don't know. Salming was a game player. Like people think of him as a skill guy, but he'd take out Philadelphia all by himself some nights.
Yeah.
So what made you retire then?
Nobody wanted me. I'm still not retired.
Oh, yeah. I'm still. I didn't retire either. Yeah,
I'm still available. there's a lot of teams been calling, and a lot of it is they're saying that the cap is, you know, there's just not enough room to put that much more money in the cap. I got Pittsburgh, and I had a year, got bought out. They went through a transition there. And I really wasn't thinking about retiring. I still wanted to play a little bit more. And then an offer came out from Germany to play. And I was going, well, you know, it's a couple of years. It was good money, and it was a different experience. So I didn't even try on the year after Pittsburgh to get in contact, because over there you start hockey in July for training and all that. So it was a good experience. I enjoyed that quite a bit.
Any regrets at all?
No, I don't. Obviously now I would look back and say, quit being so stupid in your first two or three years, you know, but that was just what your environment was, you know. I mean, you're looking like, well, if you're not with the Seals and you're with a contender, do you play any different? Yeah, I could have played different, but I might have changed the style that actually made me successful. So, sure. Yeah, you, I can't go back. I mean, obviously, I'd like to not get hurt as much. I mean, this I scored 56 goals 2 years in a row and only played 60-some games. So, that would have been nice to play a full year, you know, with Marcel and Davey healthy, just to see what we could do. I think that year, I think all three of us have been over 50 goals if Davey hadn't got hurt that year, too. I mean, Marcel and I are both over 50, but that would have been quite a feat. I mean, yeah. Obviously, the first line down over 100 points each. But, I mean, Davey and I missed, we missed each 6 weeks those 2 years. So that'd be nice to see stuff like that, just the injuries, maybe less of those.
Yeah. So has anybody ever done that before, a line get three guys get 50 goals each? That's never happened, right?
Well, I don't think that anybody I know the Oilers would say sometimes Messier would play Gretzky, yeah, and Curry. I mean, yeah, both, obviously Curry and Gretz would score 150 between the two of them. I think it was 92, and I know Curry got at least 50 that year, so there's 140 goals and two players. Yeah. And then I work with Dave Hunter in Oil and Gas a little bit, and he's got some funny stories where they'd say they would put him up on that line, you know, every once in a while, and he'd score like five straight games and get goals. And next thing you know, he's on the fourth line again, and say there'd, yeah, be laughing. He says, I'm just letting you know, I'm the boss here. I'm a goal scorer now, you know. And of course, Lumley, yeah, was doing the same things like that, guys get a chance. But I'm not sure at that point, I don't know if anybody had ever done it, because not a lot of guys, I mean, since that time, not a lot of players, teams have three guys in the same line.
Yeah.
I think you're seeing a combination of two, and then they keep adding one on either side or whatever. They need to do now.
Yeah, the Islanders like that. They had Trotsky and Bossy together all the time. Sometimes Gillies would get up there. Sometimes Tonelli would get up there, but they change around. Yeah, it is rare. You know, it's funny you talk about Gretzky. I played with Tim Waters when we all laid together. So we were the two defensemen. And so there's a couple times when you went on the ice where Wayne wants some offensive guys on the ice, and he was a fantastic teammate. But he'd see Tim and I coming on the ice, and he'd just roll his eyes and go like, oh, God. And It was funny because we knew he would apologize right away. He just, emotions would get the best of him. We knew.
We wanted
so you wanted Steve Duchene out there or something.
Yeah. But Muddy's a great guy.
That's it. Yeah. You know him. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember we were playing in Winnipeg and he was there. And obviously, he was on there when we were on the ice.
The trackers
and all that. And I mean, back then, I mean, he had a hold of my stick tighter than I had a hold of my stick. Like, on the end of the shift, I just gave it to him. I says, here, you're holding along. So here he's skating off the ice with two sticks.
Oh, that's funny. That's a good story. I like that. And that's Timmy Waters, too. But
we ended up moving together in the World Championship, of course, in 83. So it was, I mean, Muddy's been a good friend, and I just laughed.
One of the best a great teammate on and off the ice, right? He was all about the team. He'd do every head.
Pound for pound. I mean, he would take Muse and he would get, I mean, just give it, just get away from me. Leave me alone.
It's some of the things he would say to guys. Like, you can't say the things he would say to guys. Like, now you can't say that stuff. He would do anything he had to do to get the guys off the game.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Schimmer, thank you very much for coming on the show. You've been fantastic. You've had a fantastic career. I remember, seriously, I joke around about it, but when I was a young player, I was just like, and you were talking to me out there. This is great. Charlie Schimmer is talking to me like my buddy's out here on the ice. And then you go score a goal. And I'm like, oh, God, what an idiot I am.
Just a big trap.
There was too. Well, again, thank you for coming on the show. You had a fantastic career. Good to see you again. You're looking great too, by the way. Man, you got the full head of hair in a little bit.
Trying to get there. Coming big birthday this year, so I gotta try to.
Is it 70? You're 70 coming up?
Coming up another couple weeks. Yeah.
Seriously, you look great. We really do.
Happy birthday.
I'm feeling like I'm 68.
There you go. All right, Charlie. Good to see you.
All right,
what's going on, Charlie?
All the best.
Hey, Tom, as advertised, Charlie Simmer was great, man. He was funny, like you said. He was, it was just from your first interaction. That seems to be his personality, you know, all this time later.
Yeah. I loved doing these shows with Todd Vogt before. I played against the guy and we talked to each other on the ice a little bit. Really didn't know him too much, but knew of his personality. And he's funny. And he was holding back a little bit too. You know, I'm sure he's got a lot of stories that you can't tell.
Sure. So he lulled you to sleep in that first game. Hey, good to see you, Tom. How you doing? Here you go, minus one.
I've never forget that. And we talked about the story on the show, but I learned a good lesson from him. And Joey Mullen was like that. There were guys who were like, you know, here, I'm just supposed to be this big, tough defense. You know, I'm going to throw him around a whole bit. And they're just sucking me right into it.
Yeah.
Scored full of
dash one. Yeah. But, you know, it's amazing. He was on one of the greatest lines in the NHL history. And it's just amazing how it clicks like that sometimes. You know, he said he was kind of a floundering NHL player, minor league player, and then it just got this chemistry with Dion and Taylor, and it took off. You know, I mean, he scored back-to-back years.
Yeah, yes. I didn't know about him being in the minors at the start of his career because I always just looked at him as he's an NHL player and a high-level NHL player too. Really skilled. Not the best skater in the world, but really skilled, smart player. You know, we joke around about him talking on the ice, but he still was a great competitor too. You know, he was out there to score goals. I read a lot of respect for him,
342. I think I was wrong in the opening, but 342 NHL goals. That's a pretty good career.
Well, yeah, he's married to a Playboy model too. That's the other thing.
Yeah, he didn't really want to go there.
He didn't. He's remarried now, so he was very much a gentleman. He would not take the bait at all that way.
You're in L.A. You guys were dating all your models in New York. You know, let's just call it the territory. We're in New York and L.A. But you know, one thing, and we have had Luke Robitaille on the show. He did a great episode with us, number 75. So we'll say he's your friend and a fan. He's the president of the Kings. That number 11, it's going to get retired for Kopitar when he's done. Yeah. I think she retired Charlie Simmers number two.
Yeah, you know, I didn't even think of that. You're right. Problem is, Kopitar had such a great career. Not that Charlie's wasn't great too, but Kopitar was there when they won the cups, the captain of the team, and everything.
Oh, absolutely deserves it. He deserves it. 100%. Yeah. But you know, you have Brad Park's number should be retired for the Rangers.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, Tom Laidlaw's probably not, but Park and Leach, you have Bathgate and Graves, right? You have so you have numbers that are retired, and Hadfield and Messier both wore 11. So you can do it.
Yeah, you're right. Man, that triple crown line, that was historic there in L.A. That was they were the L.A. Kings there for a while.
For sure.
Yeah, it's a good point, but I never thought of it that way. But it was so interesting because, again, I'm repeating myself here, but I never viewed him that he played in the minor style. I just viewed him as this high-level NHL player. So, right, I should be retired.
Yeah, he bounced around at the beginning until he found his niche. But yeah, I mean, that line was iconic. He didn't want to talk about the song because it's pretty terrible. It was the B-side to Hockey Sock Rock. People can look at
that. That's right. I forgot about that. That's right.
Alan Thicke wrote a couple of songs, one for the Rangers and one for the Kings. And there were videos too, early videos, like way back in the day. I think you have like JD playing a jar of mustard or something.
Right.
And
that's right. Yes. Oh, who was the Ranger one? It was JD.
It was Pat Hickey, JD, Espo, and who else was in it? Maybe I think it was Dave Maloney. Yeah, I think you're right. So
nobody ever asked me to do it.
you weren't there that year. You were still at Northern Michigan, but.
Yeah.
You know, you could have played like some kind of like a banjo because you were.
Although I did do the Practical Joker video. I got that video. Who else done a Practical Joker video?
They should give a retro Emmy. Not, you know what? Emmy's not even. They should give a retro Oscar for that. Yeah. Even though it wasn't a movie, it should.
Now, I'm almost positive this. Bob Borgen was a producer who did that. He produced the King's Games on Prime Ticket. And I'm pretty sure he was up for an Emmy for the production of that video. Not for my,
Oh, wow.
It was pretty cool. People haven't seen it, right? He's got like the silhouette of me talking like I'm this criminal and, you know, like I'm like hidden identity and talking like I can't believe I did that stuff.
You can find it on YouTube. You know what? I'll link it to our YouTube page. I'll get it up there because the acting is top notch. Yourself.
Isn't it true? Seriously.
Luke Robitaille's great. Marty McSorley's great in it. So, and I think you got, Guy Gosselin, was he the goalie?
Yeah. It's amazing to see the old phone on the wall there.
Yeah. And it's amazing to see. I mean, your acting is on point. I mean, they
give you
they should give a retroactive, you know, like almost like a, you know, they right the wrongs of the past. Like you should be lauded for that video.
Don't you think like there's an old movie like the Searchers that John Wayne was in, and they, apparently that was the movie that everybody watched and kind of patterned themselves after to do westerns. So probably a lot of actors saw me acting. And
for sure. Like,
I'm going to watch that video of Laidlaw.
I think the successful show Practical Jokers, I think it was definitely inspired by that. By that episode right. of you in that, right. that poorly shot.
Funniest home videos, right?
All that too. I mean, Star Wars was probably inspired by
you
that.
You know, this is terrible. Did you ever watch Funniest Home Videos?
In the past, sure.
No, I'm a sick man. Like, I get a kick out of the overweight people falling down. Like, they show those videos all the time. And I'm dying.
Height, bull. Do you get a video, do you have short people walking, under things and get a kick out of that too? Yeah, bully, weight bully, height bully. It's supposed to be positivity, Mr. Laidlaw. Pump it up.
I'm helping people. I'm trying to shame you. That's not healthy. That's not healthy for you to be overweight.
Shaming people. I think there's a little shaming in there. But look, Funniest Home Videos was, nut shots for 20 years. Everybody loved seeing that. You know,
still.
Dad kicked it and it was like, oh, that's funny. Now we have Instagram and YouTube and Twitter and
Reels.
TikTok. Yeah, Reels. So you can see all that stuff everywhere. But what a great interview with Charlie Simmer. You were right. You said he was going to be funny. He was funny.
Yeah.
Great player. Hopefully, Luke, if you're listening, get that number retired, man.
Let's start that campaign. Yes, Simmer in the rafters. Yeah.
Well, you got Taylor is up there. Marcel Dion's up there. And Bernie Nichols should be up there too. I'm not sure if he is or not.
Oh, good point, buddy. The career hat. Wayne's it. There's a statue outside the building for Wayne, right?
I would assume. Here we go.
Yeah.
Kings. Here you go. Los Angeles Kings retired numbers. No, not number three, shockingly, based on your 4 years there. But Rob Blake's number four. Marcel Dion, Dave Taylor, Luke Robitaille, Rogie Rochon, and Wayne Gretzky.
Wow.
So you know they're going to retire. They'll retire Dustin Brown's number. They'll retire probably Jonathan Quick's number.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
They'll retire Kopitar. And then, there's room for Bernie and for Charlie Simmer. So let's go. Let's go, Luke.
Very interesting. I never thought of that. Yeah, number three's not there. Somebody was wearing number two when I first got there. That's why I took number three. I think it was Redmond.
Craig Redmond?
Craig Redmond, I think it was wearing number two. Yeah.
Was Brian Benning number two? No, he was. Is he after?
No, he was there with me. I think he may have worn number two. Yeah. He's a good player.
Yeah, he was. Good defenseman. Gary Galley was, he was three, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. And he got traded before me, so three was open. Yeah. They offered me number two after the next year. I thought, I would have made the change. So move on.
This is a new thing. You're stepping up. You're like Tom 3.0.
Yeah.
Here's a question. You have those jerseys hanging in your office. We talk about this a lot. But now in the past, they would just take the nameplate off and put a new nameplate on, right? If the size was close.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
So how?
Well, Don Waddell talked about him getting his wife actually found his jersey, but they had to take the name plaque. So there's somebody else's name on top of his name. They just went sold over top of it.
So they would just take a new name. I guess you wouldn't have five jerseys a year. You basically have one sweater for the season.
Oh, yeah, that was it. Yeah, but yeah, no, they didn't. I think that's largely why they had the dark jersey was on the road, used on the road, because it would get dirty more often on the road and they didn't want to replace it. So,
that's an interesting story. Look at that insight you just gave our audience and myself, Tom. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So it's a fascinating point you make, that the dark jerseys were on the road because they would get, I guess, transported more. They'd get dirtier, blood stains, whatever.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I'm looking back at the Kings history, and before you, it was actually, Gary Galley was in 1984. But then 85 to 2000, then Ken Hammond had it for you.
Cambone. Teddy Hammond. Let's see. I think he was running a junior team up in Owen Sound, Ontario. I think that's what he was doing. No, that was Dale DeGray.
Okay.
And we had a good bunch of guys in L.A. I like I said, I love New York. I think great teammates there, too. But once I got settled in there in L.A., we had a really good, like, even before Wayne got there, we had a good hockey team there. Obviously, being there.
Yeah. It's got to be a different world, though, playing in Los Angeles, because, there's no media. I mean, there is, but it's not like New York.
Yeah. And like Charlie said in the show, too, like a lot of times you got 8,000 or 9,000 people in your home building. And the worst was, and this is, it's like, I think a lot of people really like the jersey as a retro jersey now, the purple and gold. But you go into a place like Montreal, and you're Guy Lafleur skating around, Larry Robinson, red, white, and blue. You got all the banners up there, this rafters. And then we're skating around there in purple and gold. It really just was.
Listen, I think they look amazing. When I was in sixth grade, I begged my parents to get me a Los Angeles Kings yellow purple jersey.
Really?
I did. And the Bernie Nichols jersey, still have it. And it was a great jersey. But I want to ask you, now that we're talking about it, just give me off the top of your head the three best NHL jerseys.
Well, Rangers, I'm prejudiced, but I do like them the best.
Home or away? The blue or the white?
I like the blue.
Yep.
The Chicago jersey, especially the red one.
Beautiful.
That was nice, yeah. Man, and then there's Toronto, Montreal. Like all those original six teams, like maybe not Detroit in that category, but like I'll go with Montreal. Montreal's got
the home one, the red one.
Yeah, the red one, yes. Some of the darker jerseys I like better. Yeah.
Because, when you grew up, they would wear those at home. Now, then it flipped. Now it's back.
Yeah.
But I also think the Flyers jersey is a very underrated jersey, too. The orange jersey. It's
kind of, really?
It's a great looking jersey.
Even the Boston ones, too, especially the black Boston one.
Yeah.
So those were the darker colors. I always felt better wearing the darker colors for some reason. I just felt like Ace has wear a black t-shirt of all time, too. So.
Yeah, you still, right now, you're wearing a black shirt.
Yeah.
How do you feel about these, like the alternate jerseys? And this? Do you like the Rangers Stadium Series jersey with the big NYR down the front?
Oh, yeah, I did see that. Yeah, but I like it, but I don't like it as much as the regular jersey.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
But you know what jersey I like? I like the Cleveland Barons jersey. I like the Golden Seals jersey. I like the Kings jersey. I like all jerseys Charlie Simmel wore. He was a great guest, great player, and it was good to have him on the show.
Good sense of humor, too. And again, he held back a little bit because he get him alone. He's a great storyteller, but a lot of stories you can tell he can't repeat on the show.
We'll do that on the After Hours episodes.
Yeah, that's right, too. That'd be a funny show, do an After Hours episode.
Let's do it.
Charlie wouldn't do that. He's still married, so he can't do that.
No, he's gonna plead the fifth on that one.
Yes, he's a smart man. He's a smart man.
Smart man like yourself. And great show. And if you want a smart man like Tom Laidlaw to come to your event, please send an email to fullchangepodcast@gmail.com. Please like this show, share it, give us a review, and tell your friends about it.
Yes. Dance, we can cook, we can do whatever. Oh, I'm really big in the big sourdough kick right now. Sourdough bread.
I've seen that. Tom's sourdough bread.
Here's something I learned, that if you want sourdough bread to stay fresh, you put it in the freezer. Then when you take it out of the freezer, you put it underwater, like right under the tap, freshen it up, you get it hydrated again, then put it in the oven, and it comes out like brand new.
I had no idea, and now Coach Nate Brown of Minnesota, he loves the cooking tips. He's got a new cooking tip about sourdough bread.
It's amazing. Sourdough bread, that's like a passion of mine now. They have a certain technique, you get the stretch and fold, you got to let it proof. I used to say rise. It's not rise. It proofs. Okay? And the big thing is your sourdough starter. You have to have it fermented. Probably has to rise up. It's all about the timing of your sourdough starter. Okay?
Well, listen, there it is. Full Change Cooking with Tom Laidlaw. Enjoy us. We'll see you next week.
Yes. See you, buddy. All right, Grasshoppers. Thank you for listening. We had a fantastic show. We'll see you next time.
Why?
Why?
If you
Why?
Have T-Mobile 5G home internet, you might be hearing this
Why?
A lot.
Why?
Every time your internet slows down during the busiest hours.
Why?
Why?
Because your network gives priority to cell phone users.
Why?
Good question. Why not switch to Cox Internet with 2x faster download speeds than T-Mobile 5G home internet during peak hours?
Okay.
Stop the whys and visit cox.com/5G home for details. T-Mobile prioritizes certain T-Mobile phone users over home internet users during times of congestion.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.